I noticed that I've been singing an awful lot on the prologues to these episodes.
Okay.
And all I have to say was,
I just called to say, for fuck's sake,
we're not doing the episode that we intended to do because we're both shit at handling our schedule. And we ran out of time.
48 minutes of research.
And so we've done a last minute swap. And will we tell them what it is?
Why not?
They can wait until after the credits.
I'll ring it in.
Ring it in.
I'll phone ahead.
Phone a friend. Phone a friend and tell them to subscribe to the podcast, please.
Hello.
The best bits.
I'll use small words that you'll be sure to understand, you warthog-faced buffoon.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it.
You are stupid. You have no taste, a lousy sense of humor, and you smell.
Don't call me stupid.
Yellow, you've reached the Best Bits, a movie podcast where we pick our favorite scenes from randomly selected, weirdly specific themes. If you would like to hear two screenwriters discuss their favorite phone scenes, please press 1 now.
Hi, this is Kevin, a writer of 1-and-a-bit films and 3-and-a-bit episodes of TV, and you're on with Will, a writer of 3 films, a Christmas special, plus a Star Wars. Please hold. Thanks for holding.
Will!
Hi. You fucking Jesus.
Pop quiz hotshot, do you like scary movies? No, wait, that's not... Do you like scenes with phones in them?
Yes!
Because that's what we're doing.
Thank Christ.
Phone scene.
Oh, no.
Do you know what I have? I've got some useless trivia about telephones. Can I give you my useless trivia? That's stored in my head.
Listen, it hasn't stopped you so far.
Thank you. Thank you for humouring me in this one. I learned recently... You know the song, Hello My Darling, Hello My Darling,
Hello My Ragtime Gal.
That song is directly connected to the invention of the telephone, right? Before the invention of the telephone, everyone would go around and only use the word hello as a kind of a word of surprise or amazement of like, oh my God, look at this big baby. Hello, baby. It was like, oh, hello. You know, the way we go, hello. My God, something big is in the sky.
Hello. People pick up the phone and go like, holy shit, this is he.
They never used hello as a greeting. Never, never, never. It wasn't until the invention of the telephone, Edison and Bell couldn't decide what people would say when they first pick up the telephone. What Bell wanted people to say was,
what's the story?
Ahoy. He wanted people to say, ahoy. That's what it was.
That's what Mr. Burns says.
Ahoy, ahoy.
That's it. Yeah, yeah. Ahoy, ahoy. He wanted people to say ahoy. But it was Edison who said, no, hello would be a better one. And it was because of the invention of the telephone, everyone started to use the word hello. And then the song, Hello, My Baby, Hello, My Darling, was actually a satire on people, everyone around the place saying, hello, this, hello, that, hello, this, hello, that. So it was a piss take song. So there you go.
Do you know what I say when I pick up the phone?
What you say?
What's up?
What's up? Wasn't that the Budweiser commercial?
It was, yeah.
Yo, who's that?
Yo, you're picking the phone.
Hello?
What's up?
What's up?
Do you remember the first time you saw a mobile phone or a cell phone?
Yeah.
I remember being in school and a guy coming in with a mobile phone. And it was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Could ring in a bomb scare. And we could all get a half day. It was brilliant.
My dad used to work for the county council, right, in an office where the way you communicated with the guys out on the streets, the guys in the lorries doing stuff, was through CB radios, like old school.
Breaker, breaker.
And stuff like that. And you would go, come in, you'd pick up the CB radio and you go, come in, Mossy, this is base, over. And you'd wait and you go, and you'd wait and then you'd hear, you know, sort of stuff.
Yeah, sounds like a pilot on a plane.
Ladies and gentlemen, we should be coming in a little earlier there than expected. A little detour and place for impact.
So you always had to say over at the
fix
end.
Fix the fucking radio. What kind of technology do you have up in that cockpit? Holy Christ.
Just come out and talk to us. Come out and talk to us.
I was actually on a plane where they did that. I flew on a tiny little Cessna plane where the pilot pulled back the curtain and he loomed over me and he said, your bags are at the back. I'm in the front. There's the door. If you crash, that's the way you get out, but we're not going to crash. Be taking off in 5 minutes, boy. I was basically sitting in his lap. The plane was so small.
You could hear him farting. Airplane farts.
I could feel him farting. Fucking hell. You'd think that it's going to be really cool to be in one of those little planes, but they are so noisy.
Oh, yeah. And you could feel every twitch of his joystick.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be funny if on one of those big transatlantic flights...
Welcome to our movie podcast, by the way.
Sorry. On one of those transatlantic flights where the pilot insisted on going around and telling everyone individually what all the announcements were. You go, sorry. You go, start with A1. Sorry. Okay,
so we're actually... Or playing telephone.
Everyone.
Keep a purple leader. The person at the back one. What the fuck does he mean? The Washington's on the line. Go call Mary.
Mary?
Who's Mary?
Yes. We've been taken over by beanie bags? What does that mean? Be brilliant.
I'm telling you. What was that woman screaming on the plane? She got so drunk.
But I am telling you right now, that motherfucker back there is not real.
Looping back around, right, to my dad being on the CB radio, you're asking about the first mobile phone. I remember my brother getting a mobile phone, right? It was about 1995, 96, right? But my dad holding up the phone and he couldn't get rid of the over. He was like going, Jesus, how are you, Tommy? Over, you know, so he kept saying over after every single sentence.
What my mom does is she'll leave a message for me and she would say something like, hello, Kevin, it's your mom. Please call me back. Love you, mom. And I'm like, I can hear the voice. I know who you are, but they'll sign off as if it's a letter. Well,
can I've one more? Can I tell one last? This is the last
you
anecdote.
Can. This
right,
is we a will mini get on bit. To that. We can do whatever we want.
This is a main show. This is a main show.
Oh, fuck me. Okay.
Because we're on. This is a story. This is a story I tell.
This is like the underwater episode where people were messaging us saying, like, are you ever going to talk about films?
I'm sorry.
We spent 20 minutes talking about rebreathers and regulators and.
Last one. Yeah. Last one, and we'll get on talking, right? So eventually everyone, whatever, in the early 2000s, my mother got a phone, right? But like a lot of older people at the time, she got a phone, but she just left it at home and never used it. So I said, well, she has to learn that she has to take the phone with her and she can use it when she's out and about. And every Friday night, without doubt, they would go to Cork City to do the shopping, as I've mentioned before. So what I did was, before she left, I put the phone into her handbag, right? And I said, when she's in Cork, I'm going to ring the phone. And I heard her just like in fluster going, hello, hello, hello. And I was like, I called my mother Peggy. And I said, Peggy.
So do I.
I said, Peggy, how are you? And Peggy says, Willem, how would you know I was here?
That's my mom as well, where she's like, oh, Christ, I have to go back. I'm about to forget my phone. And I'm like, Mom, you're on the phone to me. Yeah. All right. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Listen.
Yes.
I'll say one last thing.
Go on.
Did you ever do prank calls as a kid?
I did one as an adult, yes. I've done them as adults. On my mother.
That's abuse, elder abuse.
It is, yeah.
We were all trying to emulate Bart Simpson.
Mo's Tavern. Hello, Mo. Your sister's being raped. Is that one?
Do you know what? I think prank calls is a good place to start because you can have threatening calls, breakup calls, tapped calls, missed calls. But prank calls, I think, is a way for me to kick off. And I'll tell you that when we decided to pivot and do this episode at the last minute, because we didn't have enough time to get through all the remakes, to watch the originals and the remakes and sort of do that episode justice, we decided to push it back where we've got a bit more space to get those films watched. This topic, when we decided to do it, one film immediately jumped out at me. Ruthless People.
Touchstone Films presents a movie about people who are just a little different from everyone else. Ta-da! A little more heartless.
Muffy Duck.
A little more loveless.
Ah! My husband worships the ground I walk on.
A little more brainless.
I'm robbing you!
This could very well be the stupidest person on the face of the earth.
And a lot more ruthless.
I dare you to kill her!
Ruthless People. Rated R.
Now that ought to do it.
Oh,
Did you ever see that film with Danny DeVito?
Yeah.
Helen Slater and Bette Midler and Judd Reinhold.
Yeah.
And it's filled with prank phone calls, double-crossing phone calls, confused phone calls, but it basically involves Bette Midler getting taken hostage by two bumbling criminals, Helen Slater and Judd Reinhold, and they try to pitch a ransom against Danny DeVito. But the problem is Danny DeVito and Bette Midler despise each other.
Right.
So when he is like getting the phone call and saying they want 50,000 and are going to kill her, he's like, fucking kill her. I don't care. Nice.
Yeah.
Well, what about 25,000? Forget it. 10,000? And then they go back to Bette Midler. And when she finds out how much he's been lowballing her, she decides to switch sides and team up with the kidnappers to get revenge on Danny DeVito. And one of the funniest phone calls is when they're working together to squeeze more money out of Danny DeVito. And it's a film filled with hilarious prank calls. But the one I'm going to play for you is the one where they're basically pretending that they're torturing Bette Midler. And she's giving them all the information about where the jewels are kept in the house. And what's $2 million? And it's hilarious.
Hello?
Hi, Sam.
Well, thank God it's you. Listen, I've been thinking about your last offer. And I think you're right. I cannot refuse. $10,000 is fair and totally acceptable.
She's in bad shape, Sam. You've been torturing her.
Don't kill her! Don't kill her!
We found out your wife is worth quite a bit more than $10,000.
What do you mean?
We changed our minds. We've upped the ransom.
To what?
We're up to $2 million.
$2 million? Are you out of your fucking mind? Where'd you get an incredible figure like that?
Oh, you'd be surprised at the quality and quantity of information a lit cigarette can provide.
I have to watch that again. Directed by Zaz, the Zucker Brothers. And, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And written by one of my favorite screenwriters, Dale Lawner, who did My Cousin Vinny and the Dirty Rotten Scoundrels remake and Blind Date, which isn't that good, but, you know, that was directed by Blake Edwards.
Right.
And he was quite unhappy about that because he thinks that Blake Edwards kind of changed his script. But his other three films that he's written, they're some of my favorite comedies, and Ruthless People is definitely up there.
It's one of those films that I saw when it came out on video, I'm pretty certain, but I haven't seen it since. And I have gone through a phase where I am enjoying revisiting some of these older films and a rewatch as an adult.
Because they look better.
Yeah. Yeah. It's actually, I'm actually more interested in watching that stuff than a lot of the contemporary stuff, which is something else. That's a really good one to start with.
It's such a funny film. But look, I've broken these up into different genre categories. So I have comedy, I have horror, I have drama, I have action, thriller. What have you got for me? What did you think when we decided on this topic?
What I went for the ones that left the biggest impression, you know, as scenes. You know, the ones that I really, really loved.
As a viewer or as a writer?
No, as just as a viewer. I always look at stuff from as a viewer point of view. As a writer, that's work. I'm primarily...
Have you even written any phone scenes? That's they don't really factor into your stories.
I only in my first film, there was a brief...
They do in Wolfwalkers, don't they?
The phones in Wolfwalkers, yeah. Now, they have the internet as well. But in my first...
That's right. I remember that now. That was good.
Yeah. In my first film, I'm pretty sure there was a very brief phone scene, but it wasn't. I don't even remember it, to be honest with you.
Me neither.
Yeah, not many do, actually. The thing about these particular scenes is, like, you have people isolated, you have people stuck with a thing stuck to their side of their head. Generally, they're delivering information. There's no action going on, or generally there's no action going on. So they're kind of stuck. So you have to lean in. They're very dialogue heavy scenes, obviously. So you have to lean in into the situation and the dialogue and the tension and play that's going on between characters. But in assessing the films that I thought had brilliant phone scenes or phone scenes that were probably my favorite scenes in the film. That's the way I looked at it. Is the phone scene my favorite scene in this film? So that's how I kind of...
It's a good way to pass them out. But you're saying there, though, about them being isolating. I think they're intimate.
Intimate, you're right.
It's just you and the other person. And you tune out the whole world, and it's like a direct connection between your mind and their mind.
Yeah, you're actually very right. They're more intimate. And in saying that word, it conjures up one of my picks, which is a really intimate scene between two characters talking to a third. Yeah.
I was going to guess.
It's two characters sharing a phone talking to a third. And it's...
Is it A Wonderful Life?
It's A Wonderful Life.
Hello?
Forgot my hat.
Hee-haw. Hello, Sam. How are you? Oh, well, that's awfully sweet of you, Sam. There's an old friend of yours here, George Bailey.
You mean old Mossback George?
Yes, old Mossback George.
Yeehaw, put him on.
Well, just a minute. I'll call him George.
He doesn't want to speak to George, you idiot.
Just so he asked for him. George, Sam wants to speak to you.
Is that on your list?
It's not on my list, but I also knew that yours was going to be It's a Wonderful Life.
It's on my list. It's the utter epitome of intimate because we have grumpy George Bailey, who has been forced to stay at home in Bedford Falls. He's gone over, forced to go in and talk to Mary Hatch, who's had a crush on him since he was a kid. And the phone rings and it's Sam Wainwright, the guy who's left town and had a wonderful life and made a huge success of himself. And he's forced to go on the phone and listen to Sam Wainwright blow hard while he's there sharing the phone at Mary Hatch. And the tension, the romantic and sexual tension that's there between the two of them.
They're cheek to cheek.
It's wonderful. And he's pulling away from her. And she's got this gravitational pull on him. And he finds himself compelled towards her as well. I find it romantic, incredibly romantic. You know, James Stewart and Donna Reed in this scene are incredible. You see their power as performers, and I love it.
You do love it. You've brought up a few times, and I have gone back and watched the film because of your love for it, and that is a magical scene where just everything falls away, and it's them cheek to cheek because they couldn't kiss back then.
Yeah,
they couldn't really
The Hays Code or whatever it was called. Yeah, you weren't allowed. You had to get around kisses. You had to get around it.
Yeah.
Now you listen to me. I don't want any plastics. I don't want any ground floors. And I don't want to get married ever to anyone. You understand that? I want to do what I want to do. And you're...
George.
When we're talking about that intimacy between phone scenes, that can work both ways, where you can have these great breakup moments or you can have these great falling in love moments. And you were saying, you know, scenes in films, the best scenes in films. But there's a film I don't particularly love from Cameron Crowe called Elizabethtown. And in that, the best scene in it is a phone scene between Kirsten Dunst and Orlando Bloom, where they basically just spend the whole day talking to each other on the phone, trying to eat and not hang up the phone. They're on the toilet and not hang up the phone. They just don't want to hang up on each other.
Claire, my dad's dead.
I know.
You knew?
I don't know a lot about everything, but I do know a lot about the part of everything that I know, which is people.
And I thought I was so mysterious.
Trust me, everybody is less mysterious than they think they are.
And they all know me, and I don't know any of them. And I'd never seen a dead body before.
To have never taken a solitary road trip across country, I mean, everybody's got to take a road trip at least once in their lives. Just you and some music.
You have no idea of the sheer volume of my cousin's kid when he cries.
I mean, I think there is definitely a higher spirit.
But I agree, what's left behind finally are the impressions you made on people.
more important is to know where to go.
You haven't traveled at all, have you?
I just recently decided that things really are black and white.
And so we all became helpers, which I still can't help. I can't help helping.
Okay, I'll drive back home, at least part of the way. I will take a road trip. I was actually going to go with Mitch next year. Why am I calling him Mitch?
I spend so much time thinking about all the answers to the problem that I forget what the problem actually was.
If you're smart, you'll just wear your shoes and never ask any questions. Just enjoy your footwear.
Do you ever just think I'm fooling everybody?
You have no idea.
Men see things in a box, and women see them in a round room.
Look at this, he was so young here. Wow. My mom. Not the one they wanted him to marry. They met in an elevator.
I think I've been asleep most of my life.
Me too. Come pick me
up. You know, it's funny. That's one of those films that I have no memory of. Other than I remember being so disenchanted by it. I went, Cameron Crowe, he just spun pure magic up to this point, and all of a sudden it was just evaporated, just seemed to just disappear.
Think of that lovely phone call that happens at the end of Almost Famous with Philip Seymour Hoffman, sort of giving that life advice over the phone.
Yes.
Oh, man. You made friends with him. See, friendship is the booze they feed you. Is they want you to get drunk and feel like you belong.
Well, it was fun.
Because they make you feel cool. And hey, I met you. You are not cool.
I know. Even when I thought I was, I knew I wasn't.
Right, because we are uncool. No, while women will always be a problem for guys like us, most of the great art in the world is about that very problem. Good-looking people, they got no spine. Their art never lasts. And they get the girls. But we're smarter.
Yeah, I can really see that now.
Yeah, because great art is about guilt and longing and love disguised as sex, and sex disguised as love. Hey, let's face it. Yeah, you got a big head start.
I'm glad you were home.
I'm always home. I'm uncool.
Me too.
You're doing great. You know, the only true currency in this bankrupt world is what you share with someone else when you're uncool. Is that my advice to you? And I know you think these guys are your friends. If you want to be a true friend to him, be honest and unmerciful.
That's a great... He's done great phone scenes. Cameron Crowe has written some amazing phone scenes. Like, we can bring up another one in Jerry Maguire.
It's Kush.
Shush! It's Sugar. Look, I'm calling you first because you're the most important guy in sports, and I want to know one thing. How does that feel to be a legend?
I just want to play football.
It's about to get better.
Dad!
Yeah?
It's one of the agents.
Wendy, Cushman's line is busy. You keep calling him till you get through it. Please bring me my numbers.
JJ, what's up, kid? Yeah, boy, have you talked to Maguire? Yeah, homeboy had a meltdown or something. I just wanted to be the first to tell you that I was talking to Doritos about you, and they're very interested in you. Hold on, talk to Rick, okay? Martinez, hombre, ¿cómo está?
Carlo, right now you're paying 25% of your endorsements to SMI. I would cut my commission by 7%.
I don't want to say it was drug-induced or whatever, but the fact is the guy just completely fucking freaked out. And I don't know if you want a guy like that representing you going into the draft. There, I said my piece. How's your mom?
Show you the money.
Oh, no, you can do better than that, Jerry. I want you to say it what you would mean it, brother. Hey, I got Bob Sugar on the other line. I better hear you say it.
Yeah, no. Show you the money.
Not show you. Show me the money.
Show me the money.
Yeah. Louder!
Show me the money!
That's it, brother, but you got to yell that shit!
Show me the money!
I need to feel you, Jerry!
Show me the money!
Jerry, you better yell! Show me the money! Show me the money!
Jerry, you my motherfucker!
What you gonna do, Jerry?
Yeah, definitely. He's got some great phone scenes, but I'm wondering, would you count walkie-talkie scenes as like phone scenes? Because I'm thinking about a character back and forth that basically takes place over the whole film that is just walkie-talkies back and forth. And it's in Die Hard. And
of course.
It's Sergeant Powell and John McClane. And all of John McClane's true character comes out through those conversations with Powell.
Yeah.
And, you know, that could be a, if you were doing Die Hard today, that would be just a cell phone that he has.
Yeah. I think it does count because it's serving the purpose identically as you would have would it be in a phone call. It was just that intimate, you know, two-way conversation. So it's, yeah, I think it is. I think it counts. I'll go with that. I love it because it is, it's like hanging on the phone. Like everything's going quiet. Everything, chaos, there can be chaos all around you, but you're just on the phone talking to this one person and that voice going in through one ear as well. There's something special about, there's something magical about actually long phone conversations.
I want you to do something for me. I want you to find my wife. Don't ask me how. By then you'll know how. I want you to tell her something. I want you to tell her that tell her it took me a while to figure out what a jerk I've been. But that when things started to pan out for her, I should have been more supportive, and I just should have been behind her more. Oh, shit. Tell her that that she is the best thing that ever happened to a bum like me. She's heard me saying I love you 1,000 times. She never heard me say I'm sorry. And I want you to tell her that, Al. I want you to tell her that John said that he was sorry. Okay? You got that, man?
Yeah, I got it, John. But you can tell her that yourself.
I do love them. Yeah, it's funny how these days in films, it's one of the things that people have to tackle first of all. It's like, how do we get rid of the phone? Because the phone is now so overpowered that it can do anything. But I remember in Grabbers, we cut out the phones from the film, but I had written them in the script. And I had a moment in the film, which I thought was kind of funny, where they're all trapped in the top of the bar and the little things are downstairs and they can't get out. And O'Shea, the police officer, O'Shea says, has anybody got a phone? And people take out their phones, and some people take out two phones, and he's like, call the mainland, call whoever you can get through to, tell them that we need help, that we're stuck here. And I thought, look, let's just lean into it, because a phone is not a teleportation device. It's not going to get those people out of that situation, but why not just have them occupied by trying to make calls for help and have them stuck still there? But the director and the producer said, nothing's going to date the film faster than having mobile phones, because they move on so quickly that within 6 months, what they're holding now looks like a brick. And I think they were dead right, because when you watch Grabbers now, it feels timeless. It feels like it's trapped in amber. You cannot pinpoint it to, that's 2012. It just looks like it was 2016 or whatever. And I do notice it now an awful lot when I watched my best friend's wedding recently. And there's a lovely scene that happens at the very end of the film where Julia Roberts... People hate that character, but I think it's one of the more progressive and interesting characters for a rom-com, because she's like motivated by something that's rooted in fear and that's being left behind. And I find that really tragic and sort of like relatable, and she's a great foil. But anyway, she's at the very end of the movie and she takes out this big fucking brick of a phone.
I just picture you there sitting alone at your table in your lavender gown.
Did I tell you my gown's lavender?
Hair swept up, haven't touched your cake. Suddenly, a familiar song. The moment
I wake up. And flicks down the bottom and pulls up the antenna, and she's holding it like a toaster up to her head. And they have this lovely intimate moment where he's just saying, you know, turn around, and he's there, and he has a dance with her. It's a beautiful scene, but now I'm totally taken out of it because she's holding this big fucking block.
You're just looking at the phone? Yeah, you can't not see the phone. And you know, isn't it funny how we don't have the same hang-up about, excuse the pun, with regard to the corded phones, the cord hanging off them. But when it comes to different models of mobile phones, it's weird.
Anything that's analog, it feels fine.
Yeah.
But yeah, as soon as you have anything that's computer-based, it dates it.
I grew up, I can still visualize our black rotary phone. And we lived in an era, and this is really dating me. I tell my kids this. We lived out in the countryside, but there was like six houses together, like three houses facing three houses. And across the road, there was two old, like old, they were from the generation before us, two generations before us.
Like a Wild West town.
It was kind of like a Wild West town. But we were the only house out of that block of houses that had a phone.
So everyone would come round to, you know.
The phone would ring and someone might say, could I speak to Anne? And I'm like, oh God, which Anne? And it was like, you know, Anne Murphy, right? It wasn't Anne Murphy, I'm substituting. And I go, okay, hold on a second. And I go up to Anne Murphy's house and I knock on the door and says, Anne, there's someone on the phone for you. And she said, who is it? And I'd have to go back down and I'd say, who's speaking, please? And they'd say, oh, it's Father Sheehan. Okay, Father Sheehan. And I had to go back up and tell Anne Murphy, it's Father Sheehan on the phone. And then Anne Murphy would come back down and like have a full-on conversation with Father Sheehan. No, I'm on the pill. You know, all this sort of stuff. And you're listening at the crack of the door. We grew up in a different era. And then there was that really, you're talking about like...
But you know what we've just lost recently is we've lost the ability to be able to hang up in a temper. It was so satisfying back then to just like slam the phone down. Or even to snap you. I did with Paul, is that what you're going to say? Yeah.
It's so funny. It's just like, spang. It was a brilliant decision.
It's because Paul never said goodbye on his voicemail, so I decided just to put in a really obnoxious like slam. I
think that if we ever get a voice note, you always have to add the slam after it. It's so funny. But what I was going to say was...
made me laugh, actually. We never talk about episodes like after we've done them, but on the last mini bits, you said, I was up walking because I was like, I got the episode done and I went out for a walk and I was walking along and I forgot that I'd edited in certain things because I do it in almost a fugue state at this stage. And I was walking along and you said, and it's like one of those documentaries where they keep repeating themselves and they just keep going over and over,
saying the same thing over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. It's like over and over and over again. It's saying the same thing. Oh, come on, move on.
And I just burst out laughing. And I thought, our podcast is so fucking stupid. But anyway, sorry.
I listened to that and I was like, did I actually say that many times? And I actually for a moment just went, oh no, you went so far that it became quite clear that you just put me on a loop.
Well, you were the only person that I would talk to on the phone, and that was unique to our friendship. I didn't have anybody else that I would actually call and we would have a chat on the phone. It would, for everyone else, it would be like texts or an email. But for you, it'd be like, do you fancy getting on a call? We'd arrange some day and we'd chat for like an hour and just get all of our, like, here's what's happening, here's what's up sort of chats.
It's turned into a podcast.
It turned into a podcast. But I think we're unique in that because I know loads of people that are, well, this current generation are afraid of the phone. They don't like to talk on the phone. It's a bit too intimate for them. They get stressed out by it.
That's mad. No, I get stressed out because if I'm having a phone conversation, I know I want to have an hour long phone conversation. So you need to kind of like clear the fucking decks. So it's just like, am I okay to be getting chat for a while here now? Because this is a catch up. This is a proper catch up with someone.
When I used to live in New Zealand, I worked as an inbound telesales. Well, no, it wasn't telesales. I was working on the inbound phone line at customers one-to-one, and it was for Reader's Digest. And so all these people would be calling up to enter the draw in the Reader's Digest. Yeah. And I was living in Australia, but the phone calls were coming from New Zealand. So I would have to start work at 5 in the morning because they were 2 hours ahead, I think. It was something like that. So they would start calling about 7 o'clock and I would just have all these conversations and I'd be finishing work about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And so all day I would just sit there with a headset on. I have to send you a picture of me just like lazing back in my chair and having these brilliant chats with people call up to enter the Reader's Digest draw. It was one of the cushiest jobs I had.
When I was in the council, I know this is so gone off. We'll cut all this or whatever. I don't know what's going to stick, but we're having a conversation. When I was in the council, right, this was like before I actually like had a bit of a job.
This was
in the council.
A spy agency named the council.
Yeah, the council. I was basically just brought in as a kid, if we needed, if an office needed someone just to man the phones, I was like brought in like for a week to sit in this office and man the phones, right? And I remember sitting at a council desk and there would be all different stacks of phone books there. You could be bored silly just listening to the radio and, you know, just waiting for the phone to ring basically. And I remember looking at the phone book and in the phone books at the front of the phone book, you saw all the country codes. And then like I went, oh my God, there's all the countries, every country in the world is here. This is fucking class. And then I saw the
plus
first one
for the US. Where did I get number one?
There you go. So I saw plus one for the US and I went, oh my God. And I could see all the Ireland cities in the US.
353. So there aren't even 353 countries. Why do we have 353?
353. I figured out, I was like going, okay, I figured out the area code for New York. So I went 01 and I did the area code for New York. And then I just started randomly pressing numbers and I keep pressing until the phone would ring and I could hear the distant phone, like, you know, the different ringtone. And I remember on several occasions, like the phone would pick up and you'd hear this American New York accent. Like,
what's up?
The only odd one I remember is I got through to the Central Disease Agency or something.
CDC.
It's CDC, whatever the C stands for.
Or whatever it is. There's a thing called COVID coming. You better get on that.
Yeah. But yeah, the telephone was like this magical portal in an era, in an analog era where you couldn't, there was before the internet, before all the other magic that we have right now. But the telephone was the one thing that could take you anywhere at the time. It was pretty cool.
What was your first phone? I had a little Siemens phone. It was about €69, and it was like an egg with a little antenna to it.
A little egg?
Yeah, it was small and big. And then everyone else had the 3210 or whatever. It was the Nokia 3210. Yeah. And then I had one that snapped together, and that was really satisfying. The way you could just make it snap, close it like a clamshell, clap.
Oh, yeah.
I enjoyed that because I'd be like, I'm not coming in. I'm busy. Clap. Find somebody else, bitch. Clap.
I actually Googled mine and I actually just went and I found it. It was an Ericsson GA628.
That was the really thin, silvery one, wasn't it?
No, it was actually kind of chunky. It was a black chunky with a kind of a... No, it was kind of just a regular old phone.
The other thing that was funny is I remember watching The Wire when it came out and... I think The Wire started around 2002 or 2003. It was at least popular then. And mobile phones back then were like this unusual technology that they had to explain it to the audience, but burner phones and stuff and bunk and all them trying to figure out what the fuck people were doing with mobile phones. And I thought that's so bizarre because we were all like early adopters in Europe to mobile phones. We were all using them.
Yeah.
And America was way behind.
They were way behind
phones.
Even in text messaging. I remember that. They were way behind us for text messaging.
It's because they can't spell properly. Color with a O-R.
That's it.
Get real.
Well, I think we should use this or I'll give you a clean segue to bring us back onto movies. Do you remember the mobile phone and the craze for the mobile phone in The Matrix?
You have to focus, Trinity. There's a phone at Wilson Lake. You can make it.
All right.
Go.
That one that snapped.
Oh, that was, yeah.
That was pretty, pretty cool.
I never had it.
Everyone wanted it. I remember everyone wanting one, but they were just like impossible to get. But that film has got some really good phone scenes.
Well, the phone is the magic totem in that film.
It's the portal device that gets you in and out. And it's all through analog was the magic way of getting in and out of the Matrix. When you look at those analog phones versus the mobile phones, the analog is the stuff that has aged well and not the actual, you know, the mobile phones in that film.
The genre that tends to use it more than others, at least based on my cursory research, is horror. And I think it is because of that intimacy thing. Like in Halloween, one of the great scenes in Halloween is when she's calling across the street and she hears her best friend being strangled.
Hello? All right, Annie. First I get your famous chewing, now I get your famous squealing. Annie, are you all right? Are you fooling around again? I'll kill you if this is a joke.
Annie?
It's the thing that sort of beckons her to go over and investigate, to think what's after happening. You can go right down through all the horror films, like When a Stranger Calls. The whole opening to that film is like the babysitter getting a phone call, and it is really eerie. And again, it's the best scene in that film. Nightmare on Elm Street, when Freddy sticks his tongue through the phone to Nancy. Yeah.
What?
I am your boyfriend now, Nancy.
Black Christmas, which is a fantastic horror film. All the prank phone calls in that.
Hello?
Let me lick it. Lick it. Lick it. Lick it.
Listen, you pervert, why don't you go over to Lamb of Kai? They could use a little of this.
You piggy cunt. You want my fat cock too?
Oh, why don't you go find a wall socket and stick your tongue in it? That'll give you a charge.
I'll stick my tongue up your pretty pussy.
You fucking creep.
I'm going to kill you.
Really vulgar, like crude phone calls, but really unsettling. Like you're hearing multiple voices through the line. And it's that thing of like, you're the only one that can hear this. It's not available to anyone else. It's a private message for you. Another one, like The Ring, was all built around that phone call.
Yeah,
seven
of course.
Days. I saw the Ring remake before I saw Ringu.
Oh, that's what I was going to ask you. It's like, I assume you saw that one first. Yeah.
So I did, but I went back and I saw Ringu and Ringu 2 or whatever. Yeah. And I thought that the first Ring remake made a more cohesive story. And I know that with horror, it's all about the aesthetic more than it is the story itself. But I really did love that first Ring remake from Gore Verbinski, and it scared the piss out of me. Right. Genuinely scared the shit out of me. There's two films which I can remember having like full body reaction to the horror, and one of them was in Black Christmas when she goes upstairs and the eye is peeking through the slit in the door. So he's on the other side of the door, and I remember it felt like somebody just poured ice water down my back. And then I went to see the Ring remake in, what was it, 2002, I think, or something?
I'd say three. I think it was three or four, 2003 or 2004.
Yeah, I was at college anyway. And I just left the cinema just feeling sore all over because really? I'd been so tense. Every muscle had been clenched.
Wow. And, you're right. Yeah. It was 2002. So sorry. It was 2002.
Yeah. You should get used to not correcting me. You know what I'm always right.
You know, I think it was something, maybe it was the Grudge remake I saw or something like that. That was a couple
I enjoyed
later.
That as well. I do love my schlocky horror, but do you know what's a really fantastic horror film with a phone call scene?
What?
Lost Highway.
Oh, I haven't seen that since for 20 years. Is that? Tell me about that one.
It's the one where the eerie little, the impish looking guy comes up to Bill Pullman.
Yeah.
And he gets him to call home. I'm in your apartment. and he's standing right in front of him, but he's also at his apartment. It's pure nightmare fuel. It's so creepy.
We've met before, haven't we? I don't think so. Where was it you think we met? At your house, don't you remember? No, I don't. Are you sure? Of course. As a matter of fact, I'm there right now. What do you mean, you're where right now? At your house. That's fucking crazy, man. Call me. Dial your number. Go ahead. I told you I was here. How'd you do that? Ask me. How'd you get inside my house? You invited me. It is not my custom to go where I'm not wanted. Who are you? Give me back my phone. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
One of David Lynch's best scenes.
That film confused the hell out of me. Well, it's like, it's typical of David
Dream
Lynch.
Logic.
It's a complete dream logic. And I'd love to go back and revisit it now, having found, you know, developed such a huge appreciation for his films. But I remember at the time going, what the fuck is actually going on? What the fuck is actually going on? I didn't have a clue. But I remember being so unnerved and creeped out by just the blackness, the scenes, and how characters would just disappear.
Great soundtrack, though.
Oh, God, yeah, really. So I want to rewatch that one again.
There's a funny thing, if you think about phone scenes, though, in films, and it's not just the content of them or the use of them in the story. There's a quirk of phone scenes, and that's nobody ever says goodbye. They just hang up.
Yeah, they just hang up.
Like it's Paul.
Clang. They never say goodbye.
Don't go outside or even to the restaurant.
I have a car there, not minute.
Okay.
Okay.
And no booze today, Howard.
No booze.
Wait a minute. Fine. Okay, 463.
Just let me know if you're going to leave town.
Okay.
Okay.
Be careful. Don't let anybody see you.
It's an emergency. I'm in a phone booth.
All right.
Yes, I understand.
Thank you. What'd I do without you, Paulina?
I love you too.
Why do you think that is?
I think it's because it feels like it's putting a full stop on the drama.
Yeah.
You would be breaking a scene in the middle of a scene rather than the scene continuing. Unless the scene actually ended right there, then you could say goodbye. Like, you know, actually make a goodbye of the scene.
Just imagine that scene in Heat when Robert De Niro calls up William Fichtner.
Yes.
And he says to him, you know, he knows the money's gone missing. And he says, I'm talking to nobody. He's like, what do you mean? Because the person on the other end of this line is dead.
You know what this is.
Just imagine if he then said, bye,
yes,
see you.
Yes,
goodbye.
He's like,
goodbye.
Tell you what, forget the money.
What?
Forget the money.
It's a lot of money. What are you doing? What do you mean, forget the money?
What am I doing? I'm talking to an empty telephone.
I don't understand.
Because there was a dead man on the other end of this fucking line.
Bye. Right. Good luck. Bye bye.
It's just hanging up. The first time I noticed it was in Jaws when Chief Brody is on the phone and he's getting the report from the office and his kid is after cutting his hand in the background and he's like, you know, getting the briefing or
those
whatever.
Those swings are dangerous. Stay off there. I haven't fixed them yet.
I think you're going to live. It's not the prettiest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah?
Can I go swimming?
Yeah, but let me clean this thing off first.
What do they usually do? Wash
up. I just want to make sure you don't go past the jetty. You too.
No. Can I
hang around
a bit? Keep there. I'll be out in
about 15-20
minutes. All right?
I'll dry you off.
Okay.
Okay, go on, get a band-aid.
And I love that overlapping dialogue that Spielberg has in that film. But then he just hangs up. So he never like says, I'll be down in 5 minutes or, you know, just hold the fort, I'm on my way.
Yeah.
But like, they've skipped a bit.
Yeah. And again, it would if you had the moment of him saying, okay, bye, it would just be clumsy. It's breaking the rhythm of the scene.
The Irish goodbye.
Yeah.
Bye.
Yeah,
bye.
Right.
Bye.
See ya.
All right, I'll see ya.
But the Irish goodbye.
I was just, yeah.
The Irish goodbye is not saying goodbye. That's what I think people not from Ireland call the Irish goodbye. It's just disappearing.
That's Americans, where they call it Patty's Day instead of Paddy's Day. If you've ever been to a party in Ireland, people say goodbye for about 5 hours. They do laps of the room. Like they'll go around again and again and again.
Are they still
here? There's no ducking out like without saying goodbye. It's like, I just need to go back and say goodbye. You're then there for another 40 minutes.
Yes. We can't stop saying goodbye to each other.
No, we have lock-ins for fuck's sake. We never say goodbye.
It's just because we just can't say goodbye. We're just stuck with each other the whole bloody time. Talking about being locked in, right? I was thinking about some of my favorite scenes that involve the phone and some of my favorite scenes in the film that primarily were phone scenes. And one that I was trying to think of funny ones, and one that immediately came to my head was the one from Anchorman, where he's stuck in a glass cage of emotion. And I actually remember myself and Karen, the two of us just being in kinks.
What? I didn't understand a one word you said.
Ron, are you okay? Ron.
Ron, where are you?
I'm in a glass case of emotion.
Look, he's got a Corning stone on. He's got a Corning stone on. I've got to do the news.
Well, and it's just this cycle of Ron making less and less sense and him just eventually just abandoning the phone and pressing his hands to the glass. This is, I'm in a glass cage of emotion. I can watch that scene once every day, I think, for the rest of my life, and always chuckle. Always chuckle.
Did you ever see, you're talking about being trapped in a glass cage. Did you ever see that Spanish TV short, La Cabina? Or what would it, what's it? I think it's called The Phone Booth in English.
I would have said The Cabin.
Yeah, The Cabin. Yeah, right. Maybe that's what it's called. Fuck knows. Yeah. This guy, it came out in the 70s and it played on British TV, on the BBC after Roots. And that's when a lot of people saw it. But this guy takes his kid to school and just before he's like walking through this courtyard, a group of guys have turned up and they've set down a red telephone box and they leave. They get back into their little pickup truck and they drive off. And he goes over and he goes to make a phone call in the phone booth and the door closes and he can't get out. And people start coming around and staring at him and he is like banging on the glass and they can't hear him. Some people try to help him out and it's unsettling because how quickly people just get used to the guy trapped in the phone booth and they can't do anything about it. And then the guys return and they take away the phone booth and nobody stops them. They're all watching it happen and like going, goodbye, take care. And he's taken off to an underground bunker and that's where it ends. And it's really creepy. And I think it probably is commenting on Franco and sort of turning a blind eye and how quickly you can just, something can befall you.
Yeah.
And how quickly he becomes a spectacle, and then how quickly people just ignore him. And yeah, it's an odd, like almost Twilight Zone-y type story.
I've never seen it. It came out around 2005. It's on YouTube.
No. It came out in the 70s.
No. Oh, okay. Oh, the telephone. I found it. The telephone box. That's what La Cabina stands for. You're right. Antonio Mercio is the director.
It's on YouTube. Wow. There's no phone calls happening in it, but you know, it's a phone booth.
I want to see this.
Actually, did you ever enjoy the Joel Schumacher film, The Phone Booth?
You want to know, in the moment, I did, except for one choice they made.
The voiceover.
The fucking voiceover.
Someone's got his number.
Yeah.
Don't even think about leaving that booth.
Wrong number, pal.
I'm aiming at you right now. Can you feel it, Stu?
Did you call me Stu? Who is this?
Someone who enjoys watching you. I have a 30 caliber bolt action 700 with a handhold tactical scope.
You mean like a rifle?
At this range, the exit wound ought to be about the size of a small tangerine.
You're bluffing.
There's only one way to find out.
Oh my God.
It didn't sound like he was on the phone.
It was the worst. It took you totally out of the central conceit of the film. Having it in stereophonic sound was the wrong fucking choice.
Yeah.
And it should have been his voice, like down, you should have heard his filtered voice down, like it was coming through a phone rather than that stereophonic. And it was just such the wrong choice. It really was.
The guy who wrote that actually did another sort of spin on a phone peril movie,
okay.
And that was Cellular, the one with Chris Evans and Kim Basinger.
I've not seen it.
That was really good.
Really?
That was quite good. Yeah, I enjoyed that. I read the script of that before I'd seen it, and I really enjoyed that script. It's probably my favourite Jason Statham film. He plays a baddie in it.
Tell me what I need to know.
I don't know what you're talking about!
You're never going to see your son again.
You got the wrong family!
This is the single greatest phone ever made. Hold on a second, I'm emailing this video to myself.
Kim Basinger or Kim Bassinger, she gets kidnapped.
Okay.
And she manages to cobble together a broken cell phone that she can make one phone call.
Hello?
Hello? Can you hear me?
I need your help.
Who is this, Chloe?
No. My name is Jessica Martin.
I've been kidnapped.
Someone I'm talking to, and it's destroyed. If you hang up, I mean, I'd be able to get anybody else.
Oh, my God.
Someone's coming.
Do you want to die here?
No!
Oh, God.
No!
Oh, God. We had a report of a possible kidnapping.
And it connects with this laddish Chris Evans dossing about the place, shirtless, trying to score with girls. And he gets this phone call from Kim Basinger saying, help me.
I can't get him.
I can follow your car.
Why? Don't let him go away.
Whoa! Whoa!
Where is she? Battery's dying.
Do you have a charger?
I'm checking the car. Whoa. I'm getting us a charger.
Don't worry, I'll find him.
Hurry!
I got a life and death call. Do you have a charger?
Sir, you need to wait your turn.
Excuse me.
Hey, take a number.
Now who's gonna give me that charger?
As the battery's running out and the signal's breaking up, and it was a really great conceit at the time for a thriller. I enjoyed it a lot, actually.
Wow.
Cellular.
You're actually bringing up two films that I should probably definitely name check here that primarily involve telephone. One, which is definitely brought up in the podcast in the previous episode, both actually probably have been. One was the Ryan Reynolds one, Buried, where he's buried alive with a mobile phone. He's buried in a crate. He's not buried in a coffin. He's buried in a crate. So there's a bit of space for him down there. And all he has is a phone that's running low on battery. So it's the drama is all set, you know, in that space. It was very good, you know.
Haunting film.
Yeah, really. I'd recommend it if you haven't seen it. And the other
film, we talked about it a lot on the one character film episode.
Was that it? And I'm wondering, the other film, one we brought up as well, that I'm going to bring up?
Possibly, but let me just say Cellular and Phone Booth were both written by Larry Cohen.
Oh, story by Larry Cohen. The credited screenwriter for Cellular was a guy called Chris Morgan. That's interesting. You got a story by credit.
No, it was Larry Cohen was the one that I read.
Yeah, but you're right. He's got a story by credit, Larry Cohen. Okay. Chris Morgan, who went on to do a bunch of Fast and Furious. Yeah.
I met him in LA. I had a meeting at the company. I can't remember what the company was called now. He was in the other room and I was meeting with his executive. At the very end of the thing as we were leaving, he popped his head in. He goes, hey, nice to meet you. I'm a big fan. We got to do something together. I have to head off. Great to meet you. Take care. And I thought, there is no way in hell that you've read me or that you're a fan of me, but it just felt like that typical Hollywood thing of, hey, nice to meet you, big fan. I hope you had a good meeting. Let's do something.
Is this Chris Morgan, is it?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah. Golly gee.
So Hollywood.
Yeah, he looks...
I kind of love that, though. I love that. The thing about the US is that they will kill you with kindness. They will just keep feeding you bullshit.
Yeah.
And you'll think that you're fucking storming it in your career because everyone's being nice to you.
Yeah.
When in fact, you know, you're just being fobbed off.
Yeah, that's it.
Whereas in the UK, they'll just treat you like dog shit until you do become somebody.
It's so true. At least over there, you get it with kindness. The second film I want that you reminded that I should bring up as well, that is primarily set in real time and involving a phone, is Locke, the Tom Hardy film.
That's right. Again, we talked about it on the one character.
That's episode. The one. Yeah, I was thinking we brought it up. So that was incredibly tense. The fact that it was set in real time, the fact that he was using his phone to deal with several problems in his life that were all imploding at the same time because of a previous bad decision he made. And so it built and built. Very exciting film. And not exciting.
Exciting?
I would say exciting. No, that's the wrong word. It was a tense film. I would say it's a tense film. So
engaging.
Here we go.
I'm going to mention some films that we've not talked about on the podcast before because God knows people are sick of us talking about the same stuff and they're going to get even more sick of it by the end of this episode.
Right.
In Carol, there's a phone call that happens between the two of them where nothing is said because they can't get the words out. It's where Rooney Mara calls up Cate Blanchett and it's just them breathing. She says her name. They're listening to each other. And Cate Blanchett, you can see she's almost caressing the phone that she wishes that it was actually Rooney Mara's face. And she's toying with hanging up and then she hangs up the phone and Rooney Mara says them the deadline, I miss you. And it's so heartbreaking.
Hello?
I thought that's a great phone scene where the call didn't go through, essentially. Oh. Munich, there's a great tense moment in Munich when the bomb is set up to be triggered by the phone call and the little girl picks up the phone and they're running back up to stop the bomb from going off because they don't want that on their conscience. Yeah. They don't want to blow up the doctor's kid. Another one, what about the conversation?
Mm-hmm.
Where you're listening in on conversations, would that count as like phone call scenes where you're tapping somebody's
what I think we're getting into here. I love in these episodes where the conversation that we're having eventually kind of like we find a way through it where something emerges. And for me, the big word that's coming out here is intimacy when it comes to these scenes. Intimacy is a big thing. And conversation is really intimate where we're with.
It's kind of like what a podcast is.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're listening to us. It's just our voices.
Yeah.
And all the sound effects.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there's an intimacy to it.
There certainly is. And in the case of the conversation, I paused because I was trying to recall Gene Hackman's name. but we're watching, we're with
it's Gene Hackman.
We're with Gene Hackman as, thank you. We're with Gene Hackman as he is overhearing and trying to piece together this conversation. And it's not a telephone, it's him spying. And it has that sense of intimacy.
I love you.
We're spending too much time together here.
No, let's stay just a little longer.
Did you know that he was playing the same character in Enemy of the State? But they didn't name him.
Is that for real?
That's for real as far as I know. And if I'm wrong, Podbot, shut up.
What's the...
That's correct.
Well, what's the connecting tissue? Like, was Francis Ford Coppola or the screenwriter involved? Like, you know, is there a, like, you know, an underpinning material?
No, it's just a thing where they didn't name the character. So by not naming him, he could be anybody. It's one of those things where it's like a fan canon type thing where...
Right.
He's meant to be the same guy.
Okay.
They don't say that he is.
Was that a Tony Scott film?
It was, yeah.
Okay. I must watch it again. It's been a long time. I saw it in the cinema. I interrupted you there, Kevin.
Dial M for Murder has a great tense scene where she's on the phone and the killer is coming out from behind the curtains. Mm. That's one of my favorite Hitchcock films. I hope we get to do Hitchcock films someday because his films, for me, they're velvety. They're treats. They're like Christmassy, but in a way which is thrilling. It's just, it's pure cinema. It's like, just feed it to me. I love it.
Hello.
I was wondering, I was like going, I feel like we've covered some Hitchcock. And we did in the MacGuffin episode. Because I actually went and visited a number of his films and I was just... I was popping for him.
That's what you mentioned in Cinch.
I wanted to watch more. MacGuffin's.
Plot twists. I did an impression of him in Plot Twists.
Oh, I remember that. I remember that.
That's what you mentioned in Cinch.
It's uncanny, Kevin.
Thank you.
I wanted to mention it as a phone scene, which is definitely the best scene in the film. And it's not a film that I love, but this one scene spawned a franchise. This one scene was the scene they used in the trailer, and that scene was so good that...
Are you going to say...
Taken.
I'm going to... Yeah, I'll find you wherever you are. Yeah. I'll find you. I'll fucking bait the head off you.
That single scene, which, I think it's a well-executed scene in the cinema. Absolutely. When you watch that trailer alone, which was just that scene.
When he's saying, you're going to get taken, get under the floor.
Yeah.
Don't move. And then if they do take you, what was it? Don't scream or something like that. He gives the rules of what to do.
Say everything you see. You're going to see. Just shout out every detail you see. And she does. And don't fight. Don't do this. Just do as they say. And I will find you. And there's this. And it happens.
Shout out everything you see. Bed, door, window. No, you stupid bitch. Carpet, rug, picture frame. Yeah, you just take her for fuck's sake.
Out of date library books.
I don't know who you are. I don't know what you want. If you are looking for a ransom, I can tell you I don't have money. But what I do have are a very particular set of skills. Skills I have acquired over a very long career. Skills that make me a nightmare for people like you. If you let my daughter go now, that'll be the end of it. I will not look for you. I will not pursue you. But if you don't, I will look for you. I will find you. And I will kill you.
You know, it reinvigorated Liam Neeson's career.
Good luck.
It did.
It really did. He spun his career in a whole new direction, which is the middle-aged...
Charles Bronson.
Yeah, middle-aged revenge action guy.
Yeah, geezer teasers.
I'm going to punch you right in the left nut.
So, yeah, I only have a few more to mention. When Harry Met Sally, Swingers, and... Yeah, just a burn after reading.
You mentioned Harry Masali. I have to go with Harry Masali as well. And I particularly love...
What are we doing now? Is this your pick?
No, it's not my pick. This is before my pick. Last thing. I just wanted to highlight how the phone can create a sense of intimacy between two people. And I just love this scene of Harry and Sally watching Casablanca together while still being on the phone together.
Oh, Ingrid Bergman. Now she's low maintenance.
Low maintenance?
There are two kinds of women. High maintenance and low maintenance.
And Ingrid Bergman is low maintenance?
An LM, definitely.
Which one am I?
You're the worst kind. You're high maintenance, but you think you're low maintenance.
I don't see that.
You don't see that? Waiter, I'll begin with a house salad, but I don't want the regular dressing. I'll have the balsamic vinegar and oil, but on the side. And then the salmon with the mustard sauce, but I want the mustard sauce on the side. On the side is a very big thing for you.
Well, I just want it the way I want it.
It says so much about the relationship that they're just happy to hang out and do.
But there's the alternative to that, where they have that four-way phone call.
It's great, too.
Where they do the split screen.
It's great.
I love that.
Yours.
Hello.
I'm sorry to call so early.
Are you all right?
No one I know would call at this hour.
I did something terrible.
What did you do?
No one I know would call at this
That's
hour.
That's so awful.
I need to talk.
What happened?
What's the matter?
Harry came over last night.
I went over to Sally's last night.
Because I was upset that Joe was getting married.
And one thing led to another.
And before I knew it, we were kissing.
To make
and
a
then
long story short, we did it.
They did it.
That's great, Sally.
We've been praying for it.
You should have done it in the first place.
For months we've been saying you should do it.
You guys belong together.
It's like killing two birds with one stone.
It's like two wrongs make a right. How was it?
The during part was good.
Where they had sex for the first time.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. What? Where they have sex for the first time?
That's what they're discussing. We've done it.
Yes. Oh, I thought in the scene they were having sex on the phone. I was thinking, I don't remember that scene. Yeah. There's also a brilliant one in Swingers when he starts leaving the message for the girl and he keeps calling back again and again and again and just digging a hole for himself where he's just waffling and waffling and going on and on. It's like a podcast.
Hi, Nikki. This is Mike. I met you at the Dresden tonight. I just called to say that I had a great time and you should call me tomorrow or in two days, whatever. Anyway, my number is
213-555-4679. Hi, this is Nikki. Leave a message.
Hi, Nikki, this is Mike again. I just called because it sounded like your machine might have cut me off before I finished leaving my number. Anyway, sorry to call so late, but you were still at the Dresden when I left, so I knew I'd get your machine. Anyhow, my number is 21.
It's probably the best scene in that film as well.
I've never seen Swingers.
Well, now you've got a reason to watch it.
Oh, right, okay. I've avoided it for some reason. That's good.
213-555-4679. That's it. Just want to leave my number. I didn't want to think I was weird or desperate. We should just hang out and see where it goes, because it's nice and, no expectations. So... okay, thanks a lot.
Do you know what kind of quality I hate from people are those that react like in disgust when someone says they haven't seen a particular film.
Yeah.
It's like, you've never seen Blair.
Yeah. Did so, I not do it to you know this many, episode?
No, you didn't.
Oh, I totally
what, for
did.
What film?
That's what I'm trying to do. I had this feeling where I kind of went, you haven't seen this. Wow. I'm so surprised. Oh my I've God. Seen, I'm so disgusted. I actually vomited on
I've
myself.
I've probably seen more films than
I've
you.
Got, what? I'm sorry.
I'd probably seen more films than
is
you.
Is this a dick measuring competition of like, you know, how many films we've seen?
I'd just rather speak to you in person instead of trying to fit it all into. Fuck!
There are thousands and thousands of films. Just be excited to share a film with someone and leave it at that.
Yeah.
Leave it at that. Because if you push it too hard or if you make someone feel small for not having seen some.
Nikki and Mike. This just isn't working out. I think you're great, but maybe we should just take some time off from each other. It's not you, it's me, it's what I'm going through. All right? It's only been 6 months.
Mike?
Nikki! Great! Did you just walk in, or were you listening all along?
Don't ever call me again.
Wow, I guess you're home.
Yeah, they'll not want to watch it. It creates a kind of a sense of shame of like, oh God, I'm, you know.
Yeah, and it's like suddenly you feel like you're superior to them. It's like, you've never seen The Matrix.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Or, well, why not tell them like, oh, you haven't seen them? You should watch that. It's really good.
Oh, I'm going to give you my copy of The Matrix and I'd love for you to watch it. And they'll definitely never watch it. And they'll never give up. They'll never watch it and you'll never get back. It's as simple as that. But like, I love hearing about films I haven't heard about. I'm like, oh, great. It's an excuse to look for, watch something new and good. So
you haven't seen La Cabana?
I haven't seen La Cabina. La Cabina. I haven't seen that.
I just saw it yesterday for the first time.
I haven't seen Cellular. Go on.
So a couple of ones to just get out the formalities so we can get on to me talking about one of the most impactful films for me. Burn After Reading, the very funny scene where Brad Pitt is trying he's on the phone. And in that scene where he's on the phone, it's quite funny. There's a phone in it and you should watch that scene.
Or you can go listen to MacGuffin, go to MacGuffin episode. We discussed it on that one. And you can listen to the clip there as well.
This is basically like a clip show. We could just cut in all the clips from the other episodes. This is our remake episode.
Yeah.
And we were talking about those three-way phone calls or four-way phone calls. There's a very funny one in where they end up doing that thing that mean girls would do, where they get somebody to talk about somebody else, not knowing that the person they're talking about is listening in.
Oh.
Hello? If someone says something bad about you, you'd want me to tell you, right?
No.
What if it was someone you thought was your friend?
Hold on, other line.
Do you want to know something? I've only seen bits and pieces of Mean Girls. However, it was on TV.
It is quite funny.
It was on TV recently.
Tina Fey.
I clicked on like I normally do with Mean Girls. I was passing it. I went, clicked on it, watched it. And I was enjoying it. So I hit record. So hopefully the whole film is there and I can watch it from beginning
Piracy.
To end.
Great.
Can I give you my favorite phone scene?
I'll say last thing on this topic. I like writing phone scenes because they focus everything down onto two characters and whether you are creating a dilemma, a threat for them, whether it's something intense like getting a scary phone call, like what's your favorite scary movie, or it's pranking somebody, like the Ruthless People stuff is the funniest stuff in that film, or it is somebody falling in love or somebody breaking up. You can just narrow everything down into just two people having a conversation where the rest of the world is tuned out and it's just them saying, I'm in your house. I'm not right here. I'm in your house. Or, you know, it's like, it's not needing to say goodbye because everything else that's being said is more important than saying goodbye.
That's very nicely said, Kevin. Very nicely.
I just pulled it out of my ass to try and create some sort of thesis for this episode.
Good man. Well, I'm going to break my own rules when I was making my list in the beginning, which was I was picking scenes that were phone scenes that were my favorite scenes in the film. And the phone scene I'm picking as my pick isn't my favorite scene in the film because the film I'm picking from is one of the greatest films ever made. And this is the phone scene from Goodfellas where Robert De Niro is waiting for news about Joe Pesci's character being made. And he keeps going in and out of the diner to get the word. And we see him go out. He puts his quarter into the phone booth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who's this?
This is Vinny.
Vinny, what happened? Well, did we get straightened out?
No, we had a problem. I mean, we tried to do everything we could.
What do you mean?
Well, you know what I mean. He's gone. And we couldn't do nothing about it. That's it.
What do you mean? What do you mean?
He's gone. He's gone.
Effectively, his brother has been taken out of the world and he just loses it. And it's just an amazing performance. It's so cold. It's so cruel in what he's hearing. but how he explodes. Yeah, but
he deserved it. He was a bastard. The only one I felt sorry for was his mother.
His mother. This is the thing. What they did quite cleverly in that scene is I thought Joe Pesci absolutely deserved it and many times over. But it was what hurt me and what I found really affecting in that scene is how it affected those left behind. And it was that choice. It was the choice of seeing, like, you know, how hurt Robert De Niro was and how his mother has been left behind. I just love that scene. I absolutely think it's fucking amazing. And yeah, that's my pick for this topic. How are you going to go, Kevin?
I'm going to go with His Girl Friday.
Oh.
The final scene in His Girl Friday when she is basically hanging up her stirrups as a reporter.
I still say that anybody that can write like that ain't going to give it up firmly to sew socks for a guy in the insurance business. Now I give that marriage 3 months and I'm laying 3-1. Any takers?
I'll take that bet. Hey, it's getting so a girl can't leave the room without being discussed by a bunch of old ladies. Hello, Post? Hey, get me Walter Burns, will you please?
Oh, don't get sore, Hildy. We were only saying a swell reporter like you wouldn't quit so easy.
This is Hildy Johnson. Oh, I can quit all right without a single quiver. I'm going to live like a human being, not like you chumps. Is that you, Walter? Oh, I've got some news for you. Yes, yes, I got the interview all right, but I've got some more important news. Yeah, perhaps you better get a pencil and take it down. All ready? Now get this, you double-crossing chimpanzee. There ain't going to be any interview and there ain't going to be any story. And that certified check of yours is leaving with me in 20 minutes. I wouldn't cover the burning of Rome for you if they were just lighting it up. And if I ever lay my two eyes on you again, I'm going to walk right up to you and hammer on that monkey skull of yours till it rings like a Chinese gong. Oh, so you don't know why I'm angry with you. Well, perhaps you better get Louis to tell you the story of his watch. And there's just one other little thing I want you to listen to. You hear that? That's the story I just wrote. Yes, yes, I know we had a bargain. I just said I'd write it. I didn't say I wouldn't tear it up. It's all in little pieces now, Walter, and I hope to do the same for you someday. And that, my friends, is my farewell to the newspaper game. I'm going to be a woman, not a news-getting machine. I'm going to have babies and take care of them and give them cod liver oil and watch their teeth grow. And oh, dear, if I ever see one of them look at a newspaper again, I'm going to brain them. Where's my hat?
Hello. Hello. Oh, Mr. Burns? Yes, she's still here.
And another thing I want to... Oh, God.
It is a very good. I could see your face light up thinking, oh my God, a surprise.
Yeah.
Finally, something new. And I don't have to hear about the same shit.
It's been a while since I heard about this film. But so go on.
I'm going to talk about Scream.
Scream?
Because I said this on a spec bits just a couple of hours ago. I said that when I first started to be a screenwriter, there were a handful of scripts that I read. One of them was Aliens, one of them was Good Will Hunting. I remember reading American Beauty, some Star Trek scripts, and I read Scream. And the Scream script, the first 15, 20 pages of that script was just this phone call scene, which was emulating When a Stranger Calls, the scene that takes place in that. And this was nothing new to the horror genre because they'd done so many threatening phone call scenes, like the calls are coming from inside the house, all that kind of stuff. But I remember being riveted by this almost one-act play of a phone call coming from somebody who was outside the house and it being electrifying. I didn't see Scream in the cinema because I was too young, but I got to see Scream 2. But I remember that film, like, it being a phenomenon. And I know that you felt that it was passé by the time that... Or you were too old for it when it came out. It just sort of was like, not for you. But I was right in the pocket for that. It was like right there for me as like an event film on a par with Jurassic Park. I loved reading that script, the dialogue, the economy of like Kevin Williamson's writing. And I love how the scene plays out. And it's one of the great scenes in all of genre cinema. I know that some people might turn their nose up because they've made so many fucking sequels since then that it degrades the quality of like the original, how impactful it was. But if you're asking me to think of a great phone scene, I would be just lying to you if I didn't mention Scream. I would be trying to score cool points and say like, it's the end of The Insider, that phone call between Al Pacino and Russell Crowe, which is a great scene, but it didn't kick me in the bollocks like Scream did.
Yeah.
Why do you want to know my name?
I want to know who I'm looking at.
What did you say?
I want to know who I'm talking to.
That's not what you said.
What do you think I said?
And you never forget your first love. Hello? And that, for me, was a seismic shift. It inspired me to want to write genre films. And it's fantastic writing, great performance, great direction. And it is just two people on the phone. Great stuff.
I actually rewatched that scene in my limited preparation for this episode. It's a very, very, very good scene. It's a very good scene. So well executed. And I feel it's been quite a while since you brought up Scream. So I think you're totally...
Because you started mocking me on a run of episodes with Scream.
Scream. What's my favorite film? Was Scream 1? Scream 2?
All because I was mocking you about Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, well, what did we learn? Mocking each other hurts.
Pays off. We didn't talk about fucking Speed. The whole sort of back and forth between Dennis Hopper and Keanu Reeves, pop quiz hotshot. What are you going to do? Great stuff. Look, there are phone scenes in almost every great film out there, whether it's just expounding on the character, giving insight into their lives, all the great stuff with, like, you know, leaving recorded messages and things. And I enjoy writing them, and I've enjoyed talking about them.
Yeah, and I found a few films that I'm going to add to my watch list, which already have been added to my watch list. It's a good one, Kevin. Good episode.
Well, you know what? I'm thinking, because we were going to do remakes for this episode, and we didn't get to do it because we need a little bit more preparation for that.
Sure.
And because, you know, the whole conceit of a remake is to redo it. Rather than redo us getting that episode topic, let's just include Tag in the last episode. Just chop it out of credit sequence and put it in here.
About remix.
Hey, Will and Kevin, long-time listener here, and I have an idea for a future episode, Best Remix Scene. We could explore scenes from movies that have been remade and discuss which versions did it best.
And then we don't have to say goodbye to people.
Okay.
We just hang up.
Slam.
The Best Bits podcast is produced by Will and Kevin. All audio clips and music heard in this episode is the intellectual property of the respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider becoming a Patreon member, where you'll receive bonus shows where we talk about recent releases and what we're up to. And you'll receive access to our Discord chat room, where we hang out with our listeners. Search The Best Bits podcast on Patreon or click on the link in the show notes.
That'll do.
Very good.
And here is a clip from the lad's latest Mini Bits bonus show. The full episode, plus 100 more, are available on their Patreon.
Do you ever face the inner critic of, well, what if other people don't like this?
No, I don't consider them at all.
Really?
Yeah, the audience comes last. And I'm not making it for them. I'm making it for me. And it turns out that when you make something truly for yourself, you're doing the best thing you possibly can for the audience.
Bonsoir. A bientôt. Ooh la la. J'adore. J'adore. Le petit filou. Jacques Chirac. C'est chic. C'est chic. Voulez-vous avec moi? C'est le mon jumeau. En français. Pourquoi? Ça va? Yves Saint Laurent, croissant, sacre bleu, étonner. Au revoir, c'est la vie. Je me perds. Bon voyage, le taxi, la bibliothèque. Fier, oh oui.
Fuck off.
Clio, la baisse.
Mini bits.
For such a graceful language.
Wait.
It has such an ugly one.
Am I recording? I am. Oh, what's going on though? Your voice is being dampened.
Why?
Oh, but I don't need that. Doesn't come up on the recording, does it?
No, my voice is my voice.
Because I remember on the last thing you were coughing your heart out on Coming of Age, and none of that I could hear, but I could hear it on the mic.
I need to change my how
are you, Kevin?
He was screwing up my levels. So my levels will be all a bit weird now.
No, your audio is completely switched.
Yeah.
What have you done?
Because this is like, I have to have this conversation with you every time we record.
I'm a middle-aged man. I don't know what's going on with the technology.
I'm the one with the bad memory here.
Every time we record. It's flashing 12 o'clock until the fucking 4 in the afternoon. It's 12 o'clock on the
and
cooker.
And this is a season one technical issue.
I don't know how long.
This is a season.
The pilot and egg.
This is a season one technical issue that you had, which I have to explain to you nearly every episode or every other episode. That if I use the same microphone on Google Meets, if I use that as my input, as the one I use to record, then Google Meets adjusts my audio levels on GarageBand up and down willy-nilly, which is a nightmare then when you're going to edit, because you've got sliding a loud me and a quiet me and a loud me and a really loud me.
Why is my audio in the red? Oh, that's because it's recording, is it?
What are you on about?
GarageBand, the channel is bright red.
Well, no, are you having the exact same experience where you have your audio input?
It looks like it's peaking.
But what audio input are you using for Google Meets?
Oh, I'm just using my laptop, Mike.
For your Google Meets?
Yeah.
Yeah, which is right.
Can we hit stop there for a second so I can listen back to this, see if it's... And we're back. Will. Jacques Chirac. The Chic. I'd love to learn another language.
Right, okay. Which one would you love to learn?
I'd love to. Either Irish, but I'd never use it. But I'd love to be able to just speak it because it's such a lovely, mellifluous language. If you do it, not like where you are, where it's like fucking Klingon. But I'd love to just be able to like...
Gmwe?
Speak some of it. Or I'd do... Maybe Spanish. I heard that the easiest language to learn is Norwegian. Because it's very similar to English.
Wow. Mm-hmm. I'd like to learn...
But I'd never use Norwegian. I'd never use any of these fucking languages. I can barely speak English, so I don't know why. I just had a mad thought just the other day. And I asked Don on the Discord, I was like, do you still do your language courses? And he said...
Fuck off.
And I was like, okay.
That sounds par for the course for a U-Don exchange, right? Go on.
Which is the thought that I had.
And is Don still
too much
doing
time
his
on my hands? We got questions, Will, because January is a shit month. Are you rattled? What? Do you not know what this episode's about?
No, you haven't. I've asked you like three questions, and you just have blazed past me. First question: did Don?
Because
continue?
You're talking at the same time as me. And I don't know. Please don't tell me now that we're on a delay.
Oh, it doesn't. To me, it doesn't feel like we're on a delay. I don't feel like we're on a delay.
Let's do the thing again. Let's do the click down. The whatever. The 3, 2, 1. Okay. Well, click your fucking fingers. I can't do it.
Oh, sorry. Okay. Do it right. You did it so fast. I did not know what to do. You were speaking so
fast.
Norwegian. Go on.
3, 2, 1.
Best twist ever.
Are you doing this now to fuck with me?
No! I did it the same time you were clicking your fingers.
Because you've got that suppressor on your audio. Oh.